Om Shanti, good evening. I think this evening's topic is very relevant when we think at what's happening in the world, the whole aspect of fear growing in the world, and so it's good for us to check ourselves on a deeper level, but also how we can serve others. So Brother Benoit, thank you for making yourself available and taking the time to share with us. And we look forward to exploring this topic with you.
Thank you. Yes, Om Shanti indeed is the important thing in this world, because there has never been as much fear and phobias in the world. Are you okay with the French accent? I hope. Français, oui, je pourrais parler français, absolument. Okay. Yeah, so I knew, and you all know about claustrophobia, we know about agoraphobia, we know about xenophobia. Suppose all those terms are familiar to you. You know, xenophobia, unfortunately, is becoming more and more popular. But, and I can understand, you know, why people have dentophobia, which is the fear of the dentist, or where they have nosophobia, the fear of falling ill, or why they have aerodromophobia, which is the fear of the plane. And incidentally, I read something very nice this morning in San Francisco. For people who fear the plane, now they have a pig that the people can, they can pet the pig. So the pig is all dressed up as a pilot and he has a nail polish. And so people can pet the pig because apparently it smoothes them before getting in the plane. And you can check it. So, you know, so there is also acluophobia, the fear of darkness. But what can you do in this world when you have telephonophobia, which is the fear of telephone? It's a big problem. When you have musicophobia, the fear of music, when you have hypigeaphobia, the fear of responsibility, or cheerophobia, the fear of cheerfulness. No, it exists. You know, I'm not inventing, I'm not making it up. Thank God we don't have translators. So, and then you have so many phobias. You have fear for each number, each figure. So like tetraphobia is the fear of number 4. You have hexacosiohexecontahexaphobia, which is the fear of number 666. And you have phobia for each animal, so phobia for fish, people who are afraid of fish, fear of butterflies. You have phobia for each color, chlorophobia is the fear of green, cyanophobia the fear of blue. You have fear of poetry, fear of flowers or fruits, fear of walking, fear of driving, fear of cold, fear of warm. You have the fear of being free, that's a good one. You have the fear of infinite, you have the fear of God, and you have the fear of being afraid, fear of fear. And then, of course, we invent new fears every day, like we have Islamophobia now, I'm sure you're popular with that, and we have also pauperophobia, the fear of being poor, and I'm sure more and more people feel that. And, of course, you have the fear, and we'll talk about it, the fear of being rejected, the fear of being abandoned, the fear, the great fear, which is the fear of death. But of course, we have also the Trumpophobia, the Brexitophobia, when I was in June, it was the Brexitophobia, and so on and so on. But I think my favorite is the Arachibutyrophobia, which is the fear of peanut butter remaining stuck on top of your mouth. And I'm sure it's a very hard fear for many people. Don't laugh, especially for our friends from USA and Canada, because they love this peanut butter thing. So, fear is indeed everywhere. Fear usually comes from ignorance, meaning fear of what I don't know. Or it's a fear of attachment, fear of losing what I have, or, you know, who I have. And fear can come from a big trauma, and that's a tough one. fear can be a protection in a way, because like fear prevents me from being too mischievous, or fear prevents me from driving too fast. But it can be also an obsession, and it can lead to chronic anxiety. And I'm sure you all heard of this true story of this woman. It was somewhere in May, and she boarded an American airline plane from Philadelphia to New York with her pink bag and pink flip-flop, and she sat down, and she was chatting to her neighbor, the man sitting next to her, and after a while she realized that the man was not really responding, because he was very concentrated on whatever he was writing on his notepad. And she continued to chat, but at the same time she started to see what he was writing, and he was writing in strange characters, could be Arabic. So she looked at the man, she realized that the man was a bit dark skin. So she discreetly slipped a little note to the stewardess. By that time, the plane was already going, rolling. And so the stewardess stopped the plane. The FBI came in the plane, took the man out, interrogated him for 2 hours. Well, it turns out that this man was Italian, very famous mathematician, and he was giving a conference on mathematics the same evening in New York. And so the FBI put him back in the plane, and the plane could finally take off after 2 hours. The only person who didn't take off with the plane was the woman with a pink bag and a pink flip-flop. So that shows a little bit the level. I mean, I love that story because it shows the level of paranoia where our society has come. And in fact, so there is fear for every taste. And fear is a very good way of control. Very good way of controlling. The best way of controlling. But it's also the worst, right? So when we read in 1984 Orwell's book, we didn't think that it would be so close, that people are now ready, even in France, to give up their sacred freedom in the name of security, because they are so afraid, and they are ready to be spied upon in everything they do, everything they write, everything they say, and so on and so on. And so the question, so in a way it's very convenient for a lot of people that we have fear, but the question is, how much do I control myself with fear? How much do you use fear to control the self? Ask yourself, wonder about that. And is it really the best way of functioning? And I remember a friend of mine who is a BK, has been a BK for 25 to 30 years. And I heard her say, first time it was 2 years ago in Oxford, and she was saying how she's afraid of her emotions because she cannot control them. First time I just heard it. And last May she said it again. She said how, the fear that she has about her own emotions because she cannot control them, right? So that clicked something, because then I realized we are not in the controlling business. We are in the transforming business, which is very different, I think. So that means that if we try to control our thoughts, to control our emotions, to control our habits, to control our ego, to control our anger, to control our libido, and all that, are we really on the right track? Are we really helping ourselves? And what is our way of functioning? Is it the best way of functioning? And there is a man whom you all know who really understood many things. His name is Carl Jung. Jung, C.G. Jung, right? And C.G. Jung said many great things. One of them is to say that the persona is directly connected to the anima, which I translate with the image of, well, in English, I guess you could say the pressure cooker, or in French, the marmite, meaning you have to imagine the big old pot which is hanging in the fireplace, which has been here for generations in the one room where the whole family gathers. And in this big pot, we have brewed and broiled and cooked everything for the family. And so there is the fire under the pot, and there is the lid on top of the pot, right? And so what basically Jung is telling us is that the more pressure I put on the lid, the more, in fact, I ignite the fire. The more I give strength to the fire. And, well, sometimes, you know, you may wonder in our Brahmin life if it's not what we are doing, trying to control, igniting the fire, and therefore we are imploding inside. And of course we are creating a lot of fear for ourselves. We are creating inner conflict, and we are creating a lot of fear. Because at any moment we know we can implode or explode, whatever you want. So, I will take another analogy. If there is a side of you, a sanskar, right? A side of you which you have always ignored. And worse than that, you have made promises to that side of you, and you have said to that side of you, you know, one day I will find you a job, I will find something you can do. So, you know, it's a side of you which is really in the suburb of your consciousness. And I'm using the word on purpose, the suburb of my consciousness. Well, if I keep ignoring that part of me, that part of me will one day want to be acknowledged, will express itself, will want to be recognized. And if I still ignore that part of me, that part of me will become a little bit more radical in its expression, can even become a little violent, right? And again, you know, it will be very difficult for me to handle that situation. And of course, I'm talking here on the spiritual, personal level, but you can project that on a society level, because that's what is happening in many big cities. So, does that mean that I have to put a camera behind every of my thoughts, every of my emotion, every of my habit, every of everything? Is that the best way to handle the situation? Or can I indeed look at that side of me I have ignored so far, see it, accept it, acknowledge it, integrate it? That means I put everything on the table. That means I don't ignore, I don't deny, I don't suppress, but I don't judge either. Right? I put everything on the table. And I accept this part of me, even if it's a part of me I don't really want to see, and I don't want other people to see it. I accept it, and I integrate it. I do what our friend Dennis here does, I'm sure, very well in martial art. I will use that weakness. You know, we suppose it's a weakness, but I will use that part of me, and I will make it a strength, right? And here, if I do that, I'm not in the controlling business or the denying business. I'm really in the transforming business. You agree with me? Okay. So, what are the 8 antidotes of fear? Because it's the topic tonight. Well, you know all of them. of course. And the first one is the one that Roger talked about so well yesterday from his own professional and personal experience, which is everything having to do with empathy, compassion, and love. When there is love, there is no fear. True love. Not attachment. When there is attachment, there is fear. But when there is true love, there is no fear. And he was telling us very well yesterday how in his everyday job, he is dealing with people who are facing the big fear, the fear of death. And he was saying that he is not the one who brings the solution. What he does is that he listens to them. And it's the quality of his attention, that's the word he used, the quality of his attention, you know, triggers something in these people. Just the quality of his listening brings something to these people. And of course, it is something that he carries with him. It is, of course, the many years of meditation that he has done. But just that, you know, empathy. And I have also an example here of a friend who has been meditating for 30 years. And I was sharing his room in a retreat back in May. And he was telling me that all his life, all those fears that we talked about, he had all of them, all his life. Because his mother, you know, has all those fears. She's a very protective mother, and she has all those fears. And so she communicated all those fears, and he inherited all those fears. And even through meditation, he couldn't really get rid of them. But at the beginning of the year, a friend of his, a woman who has two children who are students in Paris, was telling him how she's afraid at every moment, because since what happened in Paris last November, you know, there was a big concert place that was a big terrorist act. So, you know, she's thinking of her children who are students in Paris and who lead a normal Paris student life, means they go to cafe, they go to public places and so on. And she was afraid at every minute. And so he was listening to her, really listening to her. And while listening to her, he was thinking, but how reasonable is that? And then, you know, I mean, he was thinking, what is really the probability for them to be caught into a terrorist act? And then he realized, but, you know, what is so realistic about my own fears? What is the probability that, you know, I have? Why do I have all those fears? Why have I had all those fears in my life? What is so reasonable about that? And he told me, just like that, my fears disappeared. And he was freed. Just because he had this act of empathy that he listened to her, he was liberated from all those fears that he has always had. Another example is, you know, in France there is a Buddhist monk who is also an engineer, who is now famous, he's called Mathieu Ricard. And he wrote many books, and in one of his books he was writing about some of his friends, Buddhist monks from Tibet, who have been tortured by the Chinese. And so he was asking one of his friends who was coming back after, I don't know, 15, 20 years of being tortured in Tibet, and he asked him, when was the moment where you were the more afraid? And he said, the only moment where I really had fear was when I had the feeling I was losing the compassion for my torturers. It's a beautiful example of, you know, what compassion does for fear also. So, compassion, empathy, love is, of course, the first antidote to fear, and, you know, we could have many other examples. The second antidote to fear, or the second key against fear, is authenticity. To be authentic, right? And when I say authentic here, I mean especially inner beauty. I'm very interested about this thing, you know, this inner beauty. Because it's very strange how, you know, each one can see the other person's inner beauty. Usually we do, don't we? But we don't see our own inner beauty. And it's so important to realize, I mean, not only as Brahmins, but as human beings, it's so important to realize the full extent and the quality of our inner beauty. And again, I suppose in order to do that, you have to accept everything. And you have to accept your masculinity as well as your femininity and all that, you know, without any judgment, without any taboo, without any, you know, going beyond the usual limits. Really have a vision of yourself which is very unlimited, which is what Baba is doing with us, right? So this inner beauty, I think, is a very important meditation. Just see your own inner beauty. And, it brings us to, of course, the way, the relationship you have with Baba, which I will come to that a little bit later. The third key against fear, for us, is very obvious, but for the people outside, it's not so obvious. Especially when we talk about the fear of death, is the fact of really seeing myself as pure energy. I am pure energy. I'm not this body. I am anima, and the anima is animating the body. Being pure energy, energy never dies. So being pure energy, again, I never die, but I transform, because energy transforms itself. So even for us Brahmin, you know, we understand it intellectually, but to actually realizing what it means. I'm pure energy, I'm eternal, my part is eternal. I mean, it's really something which is huge. And so when we have realized that, and when we integrate that in our life and we live with that in our life, again, a lot of fear, I mean, many fears should disappear. The fourth key to, again, the fourth key against fear, you know it very well. And for that, what we will do is that we will go into our inner space. Right. We go into our inner space. And in my inner space, which already is a place where I feel protected, right, which is a place which only belongs to me, which is a place that nobody can invade, which is a place where I can invite or not invite other people. Well, in my inner space, I have my spiritual swing. I love my spiritual swing. So you can, you know, I make my spiritual swing like the board is made of angels' wings and the strings are made of petals of flowers, whatever you want. It can be very poetic. But today, when you get into your inner space and you go towards your spiritual swing, there is someone who is already sitting on your spiritual swing. And that's your spiritual friend, whom you know, of course. And your spiritual friend is sitting here and swinging nicely with a lot of lightness, a lot of freedom. And he says, come here, you. Come and sit next to me on my spiritual swing so that we can have a silent chit-chat of sharing our vibrations. Because, of course, we know each other so well that we don't need to speak anymore. I mean, some people do, and it's fine. But you know, it's like when really you are with an old friend, you already know what they think and you know what they feel. So many words you don't need to share. Well, that's the kind of relationship I have with my spiritual friend when we are just swinging on our spiritual swing. And it's, you know, it's, there's so much lightness, there's so much authenticity, and of course so much love. And why would I hide anything from him? I mean, he knows, not only he knows me by heart, he accepts me as I am. It means that I can be as mischievous as I want. He couldn't care less. He sees my defects and my shortcomings, but so what? He's really not interested. He doesn't feel concerned at all. He doesn't judge me one minute. He just loves me as I am and takes me as I am. So, of course, as a child and a father, but also as a mother, as a friend, as a, you know, whatever you want, all the relationships you want to establish with him. And I like this spiritual friend of mine because sometimes he's just sitting on my shoulder here and while I'm doing my daily work and things, and he's just whispering in my ears. You know, whispering is Srimat, meaning whispering beautiful things which are very sweet. There's no question of punishment, there's no question of discipline, there's no question of effort, there's no question of any of that. Or if we talk about effort, okay, we'll talk about spiritual effort, which really means to get the best of me. And fear is not part of it. Just as guilt is not part of it, just as shame and doubt are not part of it at all. So it's just a sweet, light, wonderful relationship with my spiritual friend. We are swinging, and that's it. And just doing that, I'm sure, probably, we are doing a great service. But we are not even trying to do service. We are just swinging. So yes, the world is here, the wonderful blue planet is here, and yes, we are like lighthouses and we are sending our rays of lightness and freedom to the world, which needs it a lot. But we are not even trying. We are just enjoying the moment, and the rest happens automatically. Spiritual friend on your spiritual swing. I mean, already here, a lot of fears go away. And again, as Roger said last night, nothing matters. Who cares? Really, who cares? It was someone I remember when I was in New York, he was the consul of Canada in New York. And I spent a dinner with him, and during the whole dinner, he was only saying, who cares? And I love that. So it was a great philosophy, personally. But again, you know, it doesn't mean being careless at all. But it means being authentic, being real, being yourself, being... We are not here at this confluence age to suffer. Yeah, that's a big thing. Roger talked about suffering a lot yesterday, and yes, of course, in his context, he would see a lot of suffering. But for us, Brahmin, suffering is indeed a factor of transformation, no question. But we don't have to suffer. I will come back to that a little bit later on. So that was my fourth key. My fifth key, or my fifth antidote to fear, is to really have the deep realization that whatever happens to me is the best thing that can happen to me for my spiritual development. So, of course, it's another way of saying drama is perfect. But, you know, whatever is happening to me is the best thing for my fastest spiritual transformation. On the physical level, it may not be so nice. And here, I'm not trying to see if it's something negative or something positive or whatever happens to me. Always is the best thing that can happen to me for my fastest spiritual transformation. Not on the physical level, maybe painful on the physical level, but for me, the soul is the fastest thing. And what's the point of this life? What's the point of life, generally speaking, but what's the point of this life specifically? It's to become ourselves again. Meaning to transform ourselves, to transform all those things that we talked about, the things that we don't really like about ourselves, the things that we don't really want to see, to transform them, integrate them, so that we can be ourselves, right? And here I'm using the oldest spiritual symbol, which is the one of the lotus flower. If, as a Brahmin, I see myself as the beautiful flower on top of the water and taking the energy, the light from the sun, right, can be very nice, but I'm disconnected with my own reality. And one day or the other, it will come back to me. If, on the other hand, I'm completely identified to the roots of the lotus flower, which is in the mud and the dark, I'm depressed. And that's no good either. And in between there is the stem, and the stem is a two-way, you know, circulation, communication thing that makes the flower a whole, the lotus flower a whole. And indeed, I need the light from the sun, but I also need the sap from the roots. And that's what makes the lotus flower, and it's really a holistic approach of myself. And I'm all of that. And it's only when I accept that I am all of that, that I can be authentic and I can be myself and I can start to get rid of many fears. Right? Okay. Now that was the fifth, the sixth. Six antidote to fear is another thing which is interesting. That is that the worst defects that I see in myself now are in fact my best qualities. So, of course, when you're out there, you cannot talk to people about the cycle, right? But what I do, the way I introduce it, I hope it works, is that I'm telling them, okay, if you take the riddle of the hen and the egg, and you try to solve it on a linear plan, forget it. You cannot. Who is first, the egg or the hen, right? If now you take the same riddle on a circle, and if you put the hen at 5 to midnight, and you put the egg at 5 past, right, at 0:05, well, the hen is the mother of the egg, of course, but the egg, through the chick and the chicken, is also the parent of the hen, and your riddle is solved. So why am I saying that? Because now if you do the same with your qualities here at 001 and your, you know, all those defects that you don't want to see, which are at 5 to midnight, they are the same, aren't they? But what happened is that you forget all the historical part of the cycle for just now, but just taking the logic of the cycle, we came in this cycle with all our best, purest, finest, most beautiful qualities, and we express them With all our creativity, and we had a lot of fun, and it was wonderful, not only in the first part of the cycle, but even, you know, until recently, and even for some of us until now. And, of course, expressing those qualities through matter, they lost a little bit of their essence. They got distorted, they got deformed, they got twisted a little bit. So that means that, you know, if we had a lot of royalty at the beginning of at 001, that royalty, when we arrive here, may express itself through ego or through anger because we feel frustrated, that kind of things. If we had a beautiful universal love, sanskar at the beginning, and now we have expressed it in many, many ways, many, many relationships, and it was wonderful, and until the last minute. And now we express it through attachment, we express it through lust, and it's not the same. And it's not fun anymore. And we also, if we arrived and we had a big sanskar of happiness, which we all had anyway, and you know, along the line we felt that the best way to express it was through greed. Well, greed, it can be fun for a while, you know, to get the last Ferrari and to last smartphone and that kind of things, but after a while you get bored. It's not interesting anymore. So instead of fighting against your ego, or against your anger, or against your lust, or against your attachment, which will be a lot of work, which will create more conflicts inside, which will create more fear, why don't you do what Baba does? You know, look at your inner beauty, look at yourself the way your spiritual friend sees you, and see your original beautiful quality of 001 hour of 111, and meditate on this. And of course they will pop up, they will awaken again, and they will become real again, and they will be part of our life more and more again, and they will bring a lot of lightness. And you know, that means that if you had a fear of not being enough, a lack of self-respect, that kind of thing, well, if you look at it that way, meaning that you stop, instead of judging yourself and instead of fearing whatever is in yourself, you accept it for what it is with the whole picture, makes sense. It's great. We had fun. Nothing to reject. I take everything. We did everything anyway, you know, with experience, with all the arts, we experienced with all the professions and all that. I take everything. I don't want to reject anything. To me, it's all part of the beauty. Right? The seventh key is meditation, of course. Meditation is not an end, it's a tool. But I'm using meditation here because, in fact, it's a way of introducing karma. Meaning, as I said, the point of life is to put us in front of situations, relationships and everything. And every second, you know, we are facing a new situation, a new challenge, whatever. And every time we have the choice, always the same choice, between body consciousness or soul consciousness. That means I have the choice between limited or unlimited, between selfish or altruistic, and between blaming the outside or taking 1 second and see, wait a minute, you know, what is this situation? What is it all about? Why is it happening to me? What is this situation trying to show me about myself? The thing is that life at first will give us very soft signals, and if I don't understand the signal, so okay, I will blame the outside world, I will blame, you know, the driver who is cutting my road like that, and so I will not only spread a very bad vibration outside, but I will also reinforce the distorted part of my sanskar, you know, that was triggered by that situation. You follow me? Yeah. So, and then later on, maybe in a different context, life will show me again another situation that will trigger the same sanskar. And on and on and on. And if I still don't see it, if I still don't get it, then the suffering will come. The pain will come. It will become more and more difficult. And then it can become illness, can become big accidents, things like that. I had a time in my life before again, and shortly before again, where I had, in 6 months, I had 3 big car accidents. And in one of them, really, the car, there was no car anymore. And I got out of the car, I had nothing. Well, thing is, I had broken my arm playing tennis a few days before, so I had my arm in a cast, and I think the cast protected me. But anyway, I got out of the car, and suddenly, you know, I had an unlimited vision about everything. I wanted to go to Africa and to help children of Africa. I wanted to pay the champagne to all the farmmen who were here and taking me out of the car. It was wonderful. So I realized, even though I didn't have this knowledge, that that situation had come to me not to punish me, but really to open up my consciousness and to, you know, get helping me to really sweep in front of my door and do something else. Well, probably I didn't understand on the spot, because then I had 2 other accidents. But still, without anything, I touch wood. And those things are really here to, you know, they really come because probably beforehand I didn't do what I was supposed to do. I didn't realize what I was supposed to realize. And so I needed something really tough to open up my consciousness. Shortly after I moved to New York, and shortly after I started the spiritual path, and this was the one. So in life we need those things. But yet, at the same time, as I was saying, we don't need the suffering necessarily. And that's where meditation is a beautiful tool, because we know that when a challenge comes to us, you know, if it really triggers a big, heavy sanskar, we will not be able to go into soul consciousness to be with Shiv Baba and all that kind of things, you know, immediately. Let's be realistic here. But if beforehand we have done this big spiritual preparation through meditation of, well, cleansing ourselves, of going deep into ourselves, of seeing, yes, I have this sanskar of anger, for instance, and I have to see it and have to do something about it, so that when the situation comes, well, if I have cleaned, if I have purified, if I have transformed that sanskar of whatever it is, anger beforehand, then the situations will still be coming, because I cannot change the outside world. Life is life. But I will not be affected. And that's the big thing. I will not be affected. And that's what karmatit means, you know. And more and more, hopefully, things that used to really bug me before, now I see them. I say, okay, fine. I'm much more of a detached observer, not karmatit yet, but... So that's the depth of this meditation. And the thing which is interesting in that is that, you know, Baba tells us it's easy Raja Yoga. And to me, that's really what it is. It is easy Raja Yoga. That means that I see people who do some Vipassana, very complicated meditation for 1 week in Nepal or somewhere. Fine, I mean, if that's what suits them. But the one thing of bhakti, one of the many things of bhakti that we have is that we think that the more something is complicated, the more difficult it is, the better it is. Forget that. Forget that. Because to me, it's exactly the opposite. In a good, truly spiritual life, the easier it is, the better it is. And but then when I say the better it is, I mean the more efficient it is. You know, the deeper it is also. The lighter it is. The fastest also the transformation. It's not through heaviness and complication and, you know, burden and all that, that I think we can and control, that I think we can really transform ourselves, but it's really through lightness. And that's, yes, I came into again with a big sanskara of freedom, but the one thing this Brahmin life has taught me is lightness. I wasn't so light before. And, you know, particularly when it comes to reconcile lightness and responsibility, for instance. And it's true that just seeing Dadi Kumarka when she was in the courtyard, and you knew that the whole world was happening there, and she was just sitting in her chair, and, you know, in the shade, and light. And she would come and she would give talk, but that was not a talk. She was meeting her friends, and she was telling us the little secrets of the yaya and talking about, you know, very ordinary things like, you know, the French fries and the ice cream and all things like that. And that's really something that I loved about her. So I think it's good because you know, many people out there have the understanding of karma as being fatalism, meaning that, you know, what can I do anyway? Because what happens to me today is the consequence of what I did in the past. Well, no. The good news is that through our meditation, through our easy Raja Yoga, we can really transform our deep, deep sanskaras so that, I'm not saying we change the drama, but we are less and less affected by the situations, the relationships, and the challenges. Right. And so the eighth antidote is gratitude. How lucky we are. And I mean, I feel so lucky. And I don't know why I'm so lucky. I mean, even in my, you know, spiritual life. So I live here for part of the time. I live in the south of France on the French Riviera for part of the time. What did I do? Nothing. But, and you know, how, just the fact that I met this spiritual life. I was in New York. I was in fashion. I was running a fashion perfume company. I was part of the jet set and so on and so on. I was 30 years old. The only thing is that there was something missing. I didn't know what it was. I was almost got married to a beautiful beauty editor of Harper's Bazaar and so on. But there was something missing. I didn't know what it was. And then came back to Paris and I went to see one of the old Humphrey Bogart film on the Left Bank, and someone had just put a poster there while I was waiting online, and the poster, it said World Meditation courses for free. So it was in August. At the time, you know, you could drive in Paris in August. So I went to that part of Paris where I had never been before. I met these people who were looking at me in a very insisting way, telling me things which I was not at all interested in. but there was something there. And it's really only, it's not honestly, it's really not what they told me and the way they told me. But it's, there was something. There was something. Then, that was in August. Then in October, Daddy Kumarka came to Paris with Sudesh and gave a talk at the Sorbonne. And I had the feeling I was understanding her speaking Hindi. And I don't speak a word of Hindi, even now. And really, Daddy Kumarka, there was something. So I was there and I was stunned. Really, I was stunned. I was in the middle of the Sorbonne, looking at her, stunned. And but still, I had my doubts. Then, in January, Daddy Junkie came to Paris with Giant Ivan. Something again. Well, you know, what was interesting is that everybody was afraid, talking about fear, everybody was afraid of Daddy Junkie. And when I saw her, I saw E.T., you know, back home. I mean, a mix between Louis de Funès for the French speaking and E.T. And then I didn't want to come to India at all. And then someone convinced me to go to India, and so, and I met Bab Dada, and who, I mean, I had many, many, many blessings, so that's what, I don't want to tell you my whole life story, you know, but, so those are the 8 antidotes of fear, and, I hope through that I have addressed, you know, many fears that we have, and we were talking this morning with Natalie about the fear of being rejected and the fear of being abandoned, which is a bit different. But those are big fears that many Brahmins and many people have. And, well, I would imagine that we have many tools for that. And one of the tools is really to have this kind of almost tender relationship with your spiritual friend, because you know that with him or with her, you cannot be wrong. There cannot be any attachment. There cannot be any rejection, of course. And as I said, you know, he knows, even if he sees my worst defects, he doesn't care, because what he really sees are my best qualities through that. That's what he sees. That's what he's interested in. Because for him, even putting it back into the context, the expression of my qualities as such has always been more important than just the last minute where they were expressed in their distorted way as what I call defects or shortcomings. But in fact, they are not. So use that. Instead of rejecting them, use them. Really use them. Use the anger and the greed and the attachment and the lust and everything. Use them to transcend them and get to your best spiritual level. You know, make it your foundation. You know, I remember long time ago in Om Shanti Bhavan, at the time of the Million Minutes and all that, we did this game, and there were all the Australians who were there, this game of building towers, right? So, so we had pieces of paper, and we were building those towers, and Daddy Junkie came, and she was the referee or the judge, and so she was examining every tower. And while she was examining the tower here, I remember the two Australians being Martin and Bolanat, each of them being 6'5", one on the shoulder of the other to build, you know, the highest tower. But Daddy Junkie was smart, because in fact, she was not so much interested in the highest tower, she was interested in the solid, strong tower. So in fact, she was coming to each tower, and she was first doing that on the tower, and if the tower was stable, she was kicking the tower. Yeah, but she's right, you know, the important is the foundation. And the foundation is what we have in ourselves, with everything we have, because all of that is part of our inner beauty. Right? So, we have 5 minutes left before Didi arrives. Would you like to, please, ask any question, suggestion, whatever, comments? Yes. Okay. Two examples that come to mind. Some are very personal, so I will not say them here. One. We were talking with Natalie this morning at breakfast about that. When I was 3 years old, my mother was, organizing a big evening in the house and a big party and all that, so she was the hostess. And so we, the children, had dinner before. But then, I wanted to see her, and so I pulled her dress like that, and I was dressed in my robe and my jammies, ready to go to bed. And I guess I just wanted her to come and say goodbye to me. And she threw me, she rejected me like that. And I was 3, and I love her, and I loved her, and I still love her, but she's 94 years old. But to me, when you're 3, it's a big thing, right? So in fact, what happened is that I went back upstairs, and there was a big armoire, as you say, a big cupboard, a big thing, like that, big old thing, and I slid under it. And I still remember the dust that I stayed with during 24 hours. That means the next morning everybody was looking for me, and I was there, very peaceful, very quiet, with my thumb in my mouth. And I didn't move. And so I guess that's, something that stayed with me. But then, much later on, when I was in New York, I had a dream. And the dream was the love that I had felt and expressed all my life going backwards. And of course, I reached that point, when I was 3, and it came very clearly into my dream, and it clicked. And, I became free of it because I saw it, I accepted it, I saw what it was really about. I saw, it had nothing to do with her, it was just a gesture that he had. And yes, I felt the rejection, but there's no reason for it. And really, I was freed. And so, it's similar to the experience I was talking about of this brother, who just through listening to that woman was freed of all his fears that he had all his life. So yes, to me, dreams are also very important, because it tells us a lot of things about where we are spiritually. I suppose we all have more or less those dreams where you're driving, and so, there are 4 seats in the car, and depending which seat you are in, if you're driving or if you're on the passenger seat or if you're in the back, and depending if the windshield is clear, is blurry, if it's working, and so all that kind of things are very important to tell you where you are. There are, again, little signals to tell you where you are in your spiritual development, and I think we should take them into consideration as well to help us get rid of fear, among other things. Yes. Om Shanti.